Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. Once part of the ATA tribe, you'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode where we will be talking to one Jennifer Shryock. Jennifer is a Certified Dog Behaviour Consultant, CDBC, owner of Family Paws, LLC in Cary, North Carolina, and holds a degree in special education. Jennifer is also former VP of Dog Gone Safe, a non-profit dedicated to dog bite prevention and victim support. Jennifer's proudly served on the board member as a board member of the International Childbirth Education Association. She's a recognized expert on dog and baby/toddler interactions and safety, has written and spoken extensively about these topics as well. Her two programs, Dogs and Storks and Dogs and Toddlers, have been featured in national media, such as the Wall Street Journal, Martha Stewart Living, along with many TV and radio appearances. In 2000, the Shryock family adopted their first German Shepherd rescue dog. Subsequently, Jennifer became involved with the rescue organization as a counselor and trainer, finding herself supporting families with babies or young children who, overwhelmed by the challenges of their situation, were often on the verge of surrendering an otherwise beloved dog. As a mother, dog behavior consultant, and teacher, Jennifer recognized a need for support and education for these families and began building resources for new and expecting families through her own business, Family Paws. A consistent need for the specialized service led to the creation of the highly endorsed international program Dogs and Storks for expecting and adopting families, and then years later, dogs and toddlers, for families with babies 3 months of age and up. All of his passions and ideas have led to the creation of Family Paws Parent Education, now offering programs all throughout the United States, Canada, and beyond. Jennifer has mentored and supported hundreds of dog trainers all around the world and continues to support families in her community and beyond. She currently lives in Cary, North Carolina, with her husband, four children, two dogs, and four cats. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Jennifer to the show today. She's patiently waiting by. Jennifer, good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
How are you doing?
Doing great.
Thank you for making time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I've been looking forward to that.
You've been in the game for a long time.
Yes.
And you were telling me before you actually had a podcast show before podcast shows were cool.
I did, and I'm going to have to hunt for those files, but yeah, 2008.
You used to do your show with your daughter.
It was so much fun. I don't think she would like it now. I have several different times that I've shared some of the old, you know, audio with her, and she doesn't like to hear it now, so.
Yeah, it's weird listening to your own voice sometimes.
Especially when you were 8, now she's 18.
That's cool, though. I'm sure those will be treasured memories.
Actually, to be truthful, she just did a paper. She was asked to write about a metaphor, do a metaphor on writing and something else, and she picked dog training. And she used she actually showed a video of a training session we were doing with three of our dogs, and it was the teacher used it as a great example.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah.
Great ripples.
Different types of dog training, different types of writing styles, and it was pretty cool.
Awesome. Love to hear that. Hey, I'm interested also in going back to when you were 8 years old. We're going to dive into the first question today, Jennifer. Can you take us all back to where you first learned about positive reinforcement animal training and share some stories from that time?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was fortunate to have a mother who specialized and worked with children with autism. And I would, anytime there was a day off of school, I would have to tag along, but I began to love tagging along, and my mom would assign me little tasks to achieve with certain students. And, you know, getting from point A to Z was the goal without having a child have a tantrum or get frustrated. And I really observed so much of what my mother was doing, and she used positive reinforcement. I learned about charts. I learned about all sorts of different ways to help motivate a child and accomplish those goals. And that, I loved it. I thrived on it. So I did a lot there. And when I wasn't old enough to be a teacher of children, so to speak, I taught our dogs. And I remember with my golden retriever in the backyard, having her sit and face the house and hiding all sorts of things in the back and making her hunt for it. I had a paper route and taught her to deliver the papers and come back and retrieve and get the next one. You know, I loved it. I loved it. I loved anything about teaching. And my mom said, get experience. And that's all I did. I volunteered at summer camps. I volunteered and I did those things and ended up getting my degree in special education. So I've worked in a lot of group home, group homes and intermediate care facilities, and was a program manager for a residential summer camp for adults and children with DUO diagnosis. So it was that was my beginning. Yeah.
So what happened next?
Yeah. So after that, I then, you know, met my husband at some point, and we decided to have a family. And once I had kids, I absolutely wanted a dog. I longed for dogs. I've got to tell you, I had a guinea pig. That's one thing also too. I had little agility course because I couldn't have a dog when I was in, you know, an apartment. So I had a guinea pig that I did all sorts of little agility runs with, which was super fun. But once we were married and we had several cats and we really wanted to get a dog and our boys were 3 and 2, we decided that we really wanted a German Shepherd. That's my passion, has always been. And went to Shepherd Rescue. And we went to Shepherd Rescue saying, we want a puppy. To which they said, no. You have a 3-year-old and 2-year-old. No, you don't. And we ended up adopting a 5-year-old male German Shepherd who his name was Moose. And he was just fabulous. He was just really, really, really a great addition. But he taught me a lot. That's when I learned that parenting with a dog is very different than growing up with a dog. I also learned that anything you learned as a child is your automatic default when you become in that new position. And there were a lot of things that needed to change. I can say that growing up and showing in the 70s, it was a lot different than it is now. And unfortunately, I had a lot of learning and growing to do. And it was an important time. It was an important time for me. I tried to connect with local trainers and I was not happy, not pleased with what I was seeing. It made me ask myself a lot of questions, you know, having worked with adults and kids with aggression and having to use your mind and look at body language and achieve goals without pushing someone over a threshold, I wondered why we weren't using the same kind of techniques and ideas and concepts with dogs. And I was a little upset by that at the time and became increasingly more so. So that kind of led me into exploring different parts of the dog world and deciding that I wanted to kind of jump back in and, you know, see what I could do.
So share with us a little bit more about Moose. So Moose joined your family and you said he was a great addition and he taught you a lot. Can you share some stories from kind of introducing Moose into your life?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I grew up with, so this is kind of funny. I grew up with Cavalier King Charles Spaniels and Golden Retrievers, but I always loved German Shepherds. I loved their look. I used to obsess about it. I dreamed of them. I loved them. I grew up in Morristown, New Jersey, so I would see the seeing eye dogs all over the place and just wanted a Shepherd. So Moose was, he was beautiful. He was perfect. But what I didn't know, what I wasn't prepared for, was a German Shepherd. prepared. I wasn't prepared for a German Shepherd. I kept thinking, why doesn't he just wag his tail? Like, again, Goldens and Cavaliers, you look at them, you don't even have to look at them. You breathe and they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yay. Yeah. Not a Shepherd. They're like, yeah, you gotta work on that. You gotta earn that trust. You gotta get there. They're not as open. So that was a little adjustment. The other thing was, within a half hour of adopting and having Moose in our house and having a three-year-old and two-year-old, you know, two little boys, every ball in the house was destroyed within a half hour of Moose arriving. That was a little horrifying. So we had to learn about that. I learned what ball crazy was. We lived at the end of a townhouse where there was a sand volleyball court and a basketball court, and everybody would bounce their balls, and we had floor-to-ceiling windows. So Moose would throw himself at the windows, and yeah. So I learned a lot about that. Moose was a huge contributor to everything with the Dogs and Storks program. It never occurred to me that things like Hot Wheels tracks would be absolutely exciting and enticing to him. But if it moved and it rolled, it was his. And so having the management, coming to the realization that you can, in order to work on that behavior, there's a lot you need to dedicate your time to doing, especially if your kids are going to play with this randomly, or you can manage it. And so I kind of began that whole, wow, now I have to kind of key into what are the things that trigger him to get over the top aroused and excited. Helium balloons, forget it. Really bad. So, you know, he was a great teacher. The other thing is, and I didn't mention this, but when we got Moose, we also had two cats that took quite a while to forgive me for this intruder in the house, because he was rather excited and they were rather mortified. So that took a while, but, it was a great learning opportunity. So I loved Moose so much and decided that I wanted to volunteer with Rescue. And you know how that goes. You start volunteering. And if you're a sucker and you kind of say yes, 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 enough, not only do you end up with many foster dogs as we did, which was fabulous learning experience, but I became president of GSD Rescue. And, it was a great experience. Yeah. So, yeah.
So is it safe to say that your dreams of owning a German Shepherd before you got a German Shepherd were a little bit of a contrast to actually owning Moose or having Moose in your house?
At first, yeah, it was an adjustment. I mean, yes, he was beautiful, and his beauty and the looks, I will never, ever get tired of the looks of a Shepherd. I think they're just stunning. I wasn't prepared for some of the high intensity of the breed traits. And that was a learning curve there. As you can imagine, Cavaliers and Shepherds, it's apple. I mean, now I have a Cavalier, I have a Shiloh Shepherd and a Pitbull, and they're all different, and four cats. And, you know, but it's nothing now, but at that time it was definitely a learning experience, especially as a parent, new parent.
And so you became president of the club that you mentioned there, and you started to see that people were having challenges with young families. Is that kind of how the next stage of your evolution, terrible choice of words, is that how the next part of your journey, your story kind of started?
Yeah, so one of the things that I was responsible for was handling the voice line. And we used to get all sorts of phone calls from, you know, I want to return this dog because, gee, I just bought white couches and he has black hair and it doesn't mix anymore. So not kidding, that was a call. We're really, really scared. Everybody has warned us about this breed and everybody's asked us how we can have this large dog and shepherd dog in our home and have a baby. And, you know, I would go and troubleshoot and do, obviously my background being in special ed and having a behavioral background, and I couldn't help myself. And but to go, if someone was having difficulties, and try to see and try to keep our shepherds in the home when it was possible. And I saw so many people just struggling, and I started kind of coaching on the side and supporting people. I also at one point was considering being a doula. And so really between my going in the home to do early intervention assessments with children and desire to be a doula. And I was a nursing mom counselor for years. And then the dogs, it all came together, right? So I was going into people's homes with young families and putting it all together. And a local trainer said to me, you know, you really should charge for what you're doing. And I said, well, I can't. I don't have the credentials. You know, I need to have something. Surely I need to. And she said, well, actually, you know, and she gave me some suggestions and resources. And I started to do that and started my journey in CDBC. And that's kind of where we went. But, you know, I mean, her point was a lot of people may not necessarily have credentials, but the stuff you're saying and what you're doing, I would love to work with you versus some other folks. And I would encourage you down that path. And I'm really grateful for that phone call.
And when was this?
That was 2002.
2002. So 17 years ago, nearly 18 years ago. What has happened in that time? What was the snowball?
Oh, you know, so the thing about a niche like this, right, is there's no hurry. There's always going to be babies and dogs, right? There's always, as long as I can imagine. And so I had to keep pacing myself. I remember when I made up the name Family Pause and just thinking, how do I want to answer my phone? Family Pause seemed good. it took a long time to get that going. And I don't know, it all snowballed. I started thinking, like, what is a catchy name? I didn't want to have a class that was just dogs and babies. That seems so boring. So Dogs and Storks it was, which does get people to go, huh, what is that? And that's kind of what I wanted. I wanted it to be unique and different. I wanted it to be something people turned their heads and said, what's that about? So I started offering it the second Sunday of every month in my living room. And I figured that being consistent or persistent with a new concept on a regular basis would be the best way to you know, start to normalize it, at least in my community. And so that's what I began. And I started, you know, offering that. And other trainers started taking notice. I remember being on certain message boards and people started asking more and more. And then I had to find a way to license it and you know, kind of change it and say, all right, how do I share? And, you know, it's amazing when you are a dog professional or you know, you start this, it's amazing how many different hats you wear as a business person. And yeah, that was kind of neat and exciting, terrifying too. But that's, you know, I thought, how am I going to share it? And do have it be the way I want it to continue to be. And so that's kind of how it began. Our first license agreement went out in 2005. And actually, our first educators are still educators. So, yeah.
Must be something reinforcing about working with you, Jennifer. Hey, you said there that being persistent and consistent was important. What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. You have to keep staying out there. And I think what happens, and this is why I, you know, there are days and times that I think, oh, just sell it. Sell the program. Don't license it. And I always come back to, I want a consistent presence. And I want the same message consistently, persistently in the community, because I think what happens is a lot of dog professionals will run a dog and baby class and go, oh yeah, we should get tons of people coming to this. And they get maybe one and they run away. They never offer the class again. And I wanted to make the commitment and dedication to say, we're just not going to stop. We're going to keep offering this, keeping it out in the community, staying there, staying present, staying the name, do what it takes. Because until it becomes normalized and until people understand, especially dogs and toddlers, a lot of people have the idea to prepare with their dog for life with baby. So Dogs and Storks is not the challenge. It's dogs and toddlers. And that is the program that right now is our biggest push, is we don't want to get the phone calls after something's happened. There's so much we can do before. So staying consistent and persistent in front of your community is the way to do it.
And so thinking back to 2002, if you could go back to that time and look forward from 2002, Jennifer, to where you are now, is let's think about the dreaming of a German Shepherd and then actually getting a German Shepherd, and then there was a bit of a contrast there. The vision that you had in 2002, in relation to where you are in 2019? How do they match up?
Well, I think I manifested more German Shepherds than one would ever have. My husband is a very, very animal-loving guy, thank God. I looked around the house one time when we had multiple foster dogs and thought, oh boy, you know, what did we get into? I would say, you know, we're in a really happy place, a very comfortable place, especially with our three calm dogs. Now we have dogs that, now it's just a thing, you know, everybody's meshed, it's part of the family, and we're not fostering anymore. We fostered 70 plus dogs and I don't know how many cats. So we're at the point that we're like settled, you know, we're settled with that. Our Shiloh Shepherd might be our last shepherd. I don't know, you know. So we're starting to downsize with the Cavalier, obviously.
So in 2019, with your various programs and business, what does an average week look like for you at the moment? Tell people about what you're up to in 2019.
Oh, yeah. So an average week for me is definitely running our class that we do. So we have a 13-week course that we run three times a year for dog professionals who are interested in becoming a family pause parent educator. And then my week, my best part of my week is coaching my educators. I think it's really important. I love having access and staying in touch with all of our educators. They're taking on some challenging cases, and my job in my heart is to be available and accessible to our educators who may have a case or may have a situation that they want to run by me. So I always have an open door and really try to support people. I think that's a huge part of our network. It has to be. And that's really important to me. And then I also have my own clients locally. And then I have long distance clients as well that I keep in touch and do a lot of video stuff with. And then there's the social media, the dreaded social media that I try to create. And you know, I'm hoping to spend more time having time to create more social media things. I actually just reserved office space because working at home, I'm sure a lot of other people can relate to this. It can be rather hard and isolating. And so I started to go to a shared workspace to kind of help relieve that a little bit. I hear it from a lot of dog professionals. You know, those of us that work from home, it can be rather tricky. So those are some things that I'm up to.
Yeah, I'm not trying to do more social media, said no business owner ever. We get that. So where can people go to find out more about these classes and becoming maybe you're a professional dog trainer and you want to get certified through you? Like, where can we go to find out more information?
Yeah, so it's a licensed program. And you can go to familypause.com and there is a tab that says programs and you can look there. We currently are finishing it. Well, we're midway through our final one for the year, but we are absolutely accepting applications for January. And it's 13 weeks of online, but we also would love and will be doing more in-person like weekend educator licensing opportunities. And that's a really great time because we can do role play, we can do hands-on with dogs, we can do other things. So if someone has an area that they would like to invite me out there, then we can certainly discuss that too. I really enjoy that.
Wonderful. We'll link to this stuff in the show notes. If you, as a listener, want to easily find the links, then they'll all be on the Animal Training Academy website on the write-up for this podcast episode. Hey, thanks so much for sharing everything so far, Jennifer. We love hearing people's behavior odysseys, as we call them here at ATA. Moving forward, I'd really like to talk about something that is dear to my heart at the moment, and this is about working with clients with a family. Now, you and I were talking before we pushed record. I don't know if I've mentioned it because I forget what I say when. I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast show yet, but we're about to welcome a new member to our family that's going to be made of half of my DNA and half of my wife's DNA. This new training project, everyone that's parent already is laughing at me right now, will be due due in March next year. So I hope you all enjoy this part of the podcast, because for me, it's just like getting free professional advice, basically. I love it.
I knew there was an ulterior motive here.
Well, actually, when we connected, this wasn't the case, but I knew that we were trying. So I was like, maybe.
Yeah, good. No, I'm just...
Hey, Jennifer, for those working with clients who have families of their own, you wanted to share some tips today. Can you walk through this for us?
Right. So this is really important to me. And I'm going to start with keep it simple. I remember going to many of my family's homes and writing up these massive reports and spending hours on it and doing all this detail. And I'd never hear from them again. And I think, boy, I really screwed that up or something happened. And I know we internalize, because I think all of us are wanting that feedback. We want to know that we were supportive and helpful. And what I realized was that if I were to receive that and I had two kids running around my house, I would feel like a failure from the get-go. If I opened it up and I just opening the file and looking at it and going, oh, wow, can't do. And running, you know, kind of running the other direction. So, you know, I know that's one of my coaching. I really mentor people to keep it as simple as possible. Long lesson plans are not going to work with a new and expecting family, or maybe with your expectant families, but not with your families with multiple children and children running around, not with babies. And so that was a lesson, and I've adjusted everything that I do. I don't do a typical, my plans with my families are not typical to, you know, it's one goal at a time, and we want to see the goal met before we move to the next goal or advance that goal. So it's very, very structured differently than any other that I do. So that's a big thing. Empathy and communication, boy, this is a big one for me, because thinking back to my days with Moose, when I said that I brought my childhood experiences into my experience with Moose, that meant techniques as well. And they were not friendly and nice, and they were not what I would even, you know, at all advocate now. But I had some learning to do. All of our new parents are coming from that too. This is the first time that they have a dog and a child together. So their history, their foundation, their core from their original family is going to come with them, just like in their new parenting skills. Parenting is an opportunity of growth. There's a lot of things that come up. I know everybody jokes, I don't want to be my mother, I don't want to be my father. Guess what? When you're a parent, that's what you got. So there's a lot of learning that goes along. And that's true too in how the dog was viewed. So if a dog was treated a certain way in your household growing up, when you get that new dog, you're probably going to resort to the training methods and what you knew as a child, what was modeled. So it really is our job, I think. I always talk about becoming dog aware, and I always look at it as everybody has some level of dog aware skills, even if it's basic. They know the dog has head, four legs, and a tail. I want to accept them where they are and assume that they can learn, strengthen, and build their dog aware skills. So embracing where people are versus judging. If you're invited into supporting an expectant family or a new family, that is an honor. And they're already vulnerable. So we need to really come at it from a non-judgmental point of view and allow ourselves to recognize that they are doing the best that they know. And it's really up to us to make them feel safe and guide their learning forward. So there's that. And then I think for Family Paws, we talk about babies grow, dogs age, and that we have to adjust at every stage. That's a really, really, really big thing. I think people think, oh, we got home and the dog didn't go nuts. Everything's great. And people drop the ball. And that's where we commonly see problems. Every stage is an opportunity for more learning. Every stage is something to evaluate. So babies grow, dogs age. If you think about it, a dog's sensitivities might change. So a lot of our families are waiting until they're older. They might have adopted a dog, and that dog might be 9 or 10 when they have their baby. So we have to account for the changes that are happening as the child's going through the different developmental stages, but also as the dog is going through the aging process. And I think a lot of people don't think about that. They think a dog is a dog. It's going to stay the same way. If he was happy today, he's going to be happy tomorrow. And that's not me on a good day. I mean, it just, you know, they change as much as we do. So I think we need to embrace that. And then realizing that these relationships, they really take time. Nothing is going to happen overnight. Those first 3 years are critical. Not everybody makes it through that. That is a very heavy time of change. And every dog is an individual, and how they're going to experience those changes that the child is going through. So, but relationships take time. So the whole idea, this is my biggest gripe with the whole bring home the blanket, is I think so many people think that that one little thing is going to create harmony forevermore. And that just, and I share that only because I've gone to so many baby expos, kid and parent expos, and I've had my family pause table and people proudly walk by going, yeah, we did the blanket. It was great. Everything's perfect. And I thought, why is everybody saying that? And we have to shift the expectations of a one and done exposure kind of thing. So that's a big part of my mission, is to help people see that this is an evolving relationship and it takes time. And then we definitely want to encourage any professional going in the home to be creative, be prepared to maybe go and do a little research. If you know you're going to be visiting a home with a 6-month-old baby, YouTube it, 6-month-old development. Get familiar with it. Look at it. See what these parents might be experiencing. See what having that knowledge is really important, because we're doing a disservice if we're not including that part of the dynamic, you know, if we're not involving and honoring where this family is at. And then I would say, ultimately, my fifth tip there is, if you're not comfortable, which a lot of people are not, if you're not comfortable with these types of cases, don't be afraid to refer on. These are dynamic and emotional and very complex cases. And just like I'm not a huge fan of doing, you know, reactive dog, leash walking and things like that, those are cases I refer on, or separation anxiety, you know, don't be afraid to refer on. It is probably the most professional thing you can do if you're not comfortable with it.
Some great tips there. So going back, we'll go through them all again and unpack some of them a little bit more. Number one was keep it simple. So you shared a great tip there about just giving them one small approximation and making sure that when that approximation is been done, I'm assuming there's some natural reinforcers at play there to maintain that behavior over time. Do you have any other tips for people working in this context for helping keep it simple for these families?
Yeah, so giving small tips and then having deadlines, so, or goals. You know, I know everybody's busy, I tend to work very differently. I don't do like 6 sessions in a row. I do, I'm there as they need me. So I have a whole different structure. So to me, it's like, okay, we have this goal. I'm not going to pressure you on that goal. But if that has been the decided on goal, then I want you to send me, you know, whenever that may be, a video of that, you know, you working on the goal, or you getting to the point that you're comfortable with the results of working on the goal. And actually, that has led to much more direct interaction and connectedness with my families. It also has led, what I've found, and I don't know if others have, with the video contact, I get more positive stuff. I get people sharing really good, fun things like, hey, look what happened today, which is so wonderful for us. Because I think so many times we, at least in the past, we wouldn't hear from our families or clients unless something was going wrong. So what I found is the introduction of more video, and there's different apps that make that really, really helpful. But that has led to such a better success rate, and also it's helped with burnout, because I've definitely been in the burnout phase and gone through that several times. And so keeping it simple was better for me, so that I wasn't writing hours of stuff for them to do only to have them go, I'm done. You can't do this. And I'm seeing results, and it's a lot better, and they stay clients a lot longer.
So maybe expand a little bit, because I'm interested to learn. I definitely haven't been doing this online as long as you have, so I'm sure that you have been through probably some of the things I'm learning, and I'm reinventing the wheel with what I'm doing. I'm just coming to ask you. But you said you've gone to Burn It, and I can appreciate if you're asking people to send you videos that potentially someone might send you a 15-minute long video going, look at my dog. Like, what have you done to, and what apps are you using to kind of facilitate? Oh, yeah. And do you give instructions to your clients about what kind of videos they should send you, how long they should be, and if they should review them themselves and provide feedback to you on their own thoughts? Like, how do you work that? I'm interested to know.
Oh, all of the above. I'm not going to give all my secrets away. All of the above. You know, I've never had someone take advantage of that. I'll be honest with you. So I've never, you know, I have a very different structure that is, I'm here when you need me. I'm here for peace of mind. So, you know, my clients are with me for at least, you know, through certain critical periods, because when it's dealing with dogs and babies, dogs and toddlers, they need me now. They don't need me in a week, 5 weeks. So I don't work like that. So when they have a video and a success story, they can use Marco Polo is a great app. I love it. I use it all the time. So it's one of my favorites. And what I love is it's like, It just encourages constant, encourages interaction when it's convenient for both parties. Texting is okay. I've kind of switched over. I don't use that as much, but I've heard, you know, all sorts of different ideas. I heard someone the other day has like a Facebook group for every individual client. I have not done that, but it's an idea to consider. You know, I use everything, you know, and I'm constantly changing how I'm doing that. But right now I'm pretty hooked on Marco Polo. I love it. My clients like it. And it's been really, really helpful. So if I say, all right, we're doing mat work, you know, we might set up several different goals. You know, what's interesting, like I said, is the easier it is for them to communicate, the more you're accessible to them. And this is not for everybody. Not everybody wants to work this way. I love it. The more they're likely to give you the positive stuff, which is what I want. I want to see them happy. I want to see me showing their dog relaxed on a tether. I want to see those things. So it's so easy to give reinforcement both ways. And that's what I love about it. Yeah.
And just to go down a rabbit hole, because we like rabbit holes, as do the listeners of the show, apparently. It's the feedback I get. You mentioned burnout there, and I just want to take a sec, because we like to talk about, create opportunities to talk about mental health on this show. It's important. We don't want to lose any of you listening to this show as professionals in our industry. So do you want to share anything about your experiences there, and kind of what has been some tips you can potentially share that have helped you work through this? Because you've stayed with us. You're still here. You know,
I'm still here.
And we're grateful for that. So obviously you've been doing stuff that works for you, and maybe we can learn from that.
Yeah, you know, I think it is a really important subject. And I do need to just plug Colleen Pilar's Unleashed Resilience course here, because she's doing some incredible work on this very topic. And I adore her. And boy, she's someone that I admire and really knows what she's talking about. So I encourage people to check that out. But I will say that has helped me a lot take the courses that she's offering. The connectedness, I talked about isolation. I think many of us, always thought of myself sort of extroverted, but realized I'm more introverted in some ways as well. We all have to really figure out other things besides dogs and other things. You know, if you're taking a lot of aggression cases, then you really need to make sure you're getting puppy time or kitten time or something that's going to boost you up and light you up. I do some volunteer work. I just started volunteering at the memory care center up the street. That takes me out of dogs. It gets me in the mental health a little bit. It's something that I just thrive on. There are, you know, finding those things that step out of this, step out of the dogs. You know, if I have a week where it's, yeah, four families who are all coming to, you know, they have a resource garter and a baby on the way, and it's a bad, there's been bites already, and there's, you know, and you know, things stack up over time. And what I find, maybe some of you find this too, is you never get just one. It seems like right now, and I mean this with names too, I've had three dogs come to me with the name Brownie. I don't know why. But it's the same with cases. You get three resource guarding cases that are just not safe. It seems to come in clusters. And that's when I really lean on my group. I think that's when our Family Pause educators thrive, is I've got a whole group, you know, over 200 people that I can say, I'm having a really crappy day and I'm not feeling really, you know, I'm overwhelmed. This is tough. And maybe we schedule a Zoom, or maybe we, you know, just reach out and pick up the phone. I think that's really important. And having the safe space to do that, where you're not bashing, you're not criticizing anybody, but you're just saying, this situation is weighing heavy on my heart, and I'm having a really hard time moving past that. And just, you know, you have to have an outlet. So I journal. Another thing that I recommend to my educators is, when you walk away from a case, write down three things that went really well. Three things. And, you know, and I also like to check in on my triggers, if something's triggering me about this particular case. Again, in my niche, we're going into a lot of home situations. We're going, you know, everybody is, but we're going into dynamic situations, and there can be more triggers. So those are things that I consider as well, because if you're being emotionally triggered, so say someone has lost a baby or any of those things, if that's a trigger for you, that case may be hard to handle. So tapping in on those things. So those are things that I encourage people to do. And then I always get a monthly massage.
Can imagine it helps as well. So
yeah,
connecting with your community so we can thrive, not just survive, and having empathy for yourself, which moves us on to the second thing that you suggested that we need to have for our customers. You said that assuming that the customers are keen to learn, strengthen, and build where they are, and embracing the people where you come in and embracing them where they are. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I know we talk a lot about body language and different things, and I think in our field, we've kind of referenced dog bite. I'll get there. Dog bite prevention, where I think a lot of times people are saying, you're not informed, you don't know this, you're not educated, you're not dog savvy, something. I always see that as a negative, and I really want to turn that around and have a different spin. So I've been talking about dog aware, building, strengthening, increasing dog aware skills. And I look at it as every single human being has some level of foundational dog aware skills. They know something about the dog. They might know when they growl. It's not a good thing. They might know something, or, I mean, growl. Everybody knows, up, oh, something's up. So what I want to do is find out where our families, what are their level? What do they know? What are they comfortable with? What do they, how are their observation skills? What do they notice already? And then build from there. Acknowledge and validate what they do know, what they have, and then build from there. So they might have some things that are a little off track. That's okay. But they're here and learning with us. So let's just invite them to learn more and guide them along that. Let's not judge them or tell them what they don't know. I think so many times we get into just telling. I want to ask, and I want to hear, and I want to gather more information before I give information. I want to ask versus assume.
So it's just sounding a lot to me that we're treating them like learners.
They are learners. They want to achieve.
So, we're not judging our dogs when we go in there. We're starting where our dogs are at. So you're suggesting, yes, maybe kind of taking that frame that we place on how we work with dogs to working with clients as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think there's a discrepancy there? Where do people trip up in that they're so good at working with dogs and kind of doing what you've just suggested with dogs, but then potentially when they come to their clients, they're on these forums and they're not entering where the client is?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I think we're hard on ourselves, right? And the way that we kind of, I think it comes down to maybe even our own insecurity and judgment of our own selves. And we're rather harsh on ourselves. And that's the only thing that I look at behavior and I think, what does that do? Because being judgmental obviously reinforces us somehow. And I think sometimes it's easier to get in and get in that dirty stuff and nasty stuff because that we're not there, right? We're higher than that. We're better than that. Or that's them. And I think we have to become, instead of, we need to see ourselves in these people. You know, and that's how, listen, when, you know, when I brought Moose home, all I knew was, and at that time, okay, mind you, I don't want to get a whole bunch of emails and everything about this, but at that time, the skills and the tools that I had were choke collar, and that's what I had. That's what I knew. And if someone beat me over the head about that, it wouldn't have helped me. I looked at it and said, this is not what I want to use. And it made sense not to use it. And then I jumped into other things that I could be using, such as a harness and everything else. But, you know, the more that someone is going to put you down for that when you're already vulnerable and reaching out for help, the less likely you're going to be open to the help that's being, you know, that might be there. You're not going to learn. When we're scared or we feel anxious, we're not going to take in the information and we're going to move away from it.
I don't know who it was that said, they are just you. No, you are just them, but with more information.
Dr. Friedman.
It was. I'm sure.
I couldn't quite remember the. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true. It's true. And you know, I think about, I even hesitate to say that was my background. I mean, it was, and in the 70s, that's kind of what you did. I remember going to the obedience classes and just praying my dog would sit, that she would just sit because I didn't want the instructor to come over to me. I was so intimidated and I was fearful, let alone my dog. So I'm so grateful things have changed. But my brother who got a dog, he got a dog a couple of years ago. And he was pulling from, even though he's older than me, he was pulling from our childhood dog raising skills. And that was such an interesting learning curve for me because everything he was saying brought me back there. And I thought, wow, he is me 20 years ago. He's in the same place. So it put me in a really tough situation. And it was fascinating to see that play out even in my own family.
Interesting conversations in the family there. You say babies grow, dogs age, relationships take time. And one of the things you mentioned was that you'd be at these events and someone would come up to you and say, yeah, we did the blanket thing. Well, so obviously that's reinforcing as on a society level. Can I even say that? Does that even make sense? But it's got stickiness. What do you think about that has stickiness? And if we can identify that, can we use the thing that's making it sticky to our advantage to teach? Does that question make sense?
Yeah,
makes sense
it
to
does.
Me.
So I think it's sticky because, you know, it's like socialization in a way. When you see any article, it's going to mention, you know, do this, do this, do this. So, you know, if you gave 3 tips on what to do before bringing home a baby, there would be the same 3 tips that have been repeated a million times since, I don't know, the beginning of time. And it's not that it's wrong. It's just that the original concept was more about, classical conditioning and creating CER and doing all this other stuff. There were other things going on, right? It wasn't a one and done. So what I say, you know, so it's tangible. People love tangible. So if we say, bring home the baby's cap and we bring home, you know, a blanket and your dog sniffs it and they don't go, I don't even know what people expect them to do. Like if they don't get horns and, you know, then everything's fine. And that's my fear, is that a lot of people do think that is kind of the ultimate tip. And I look at it from the perspective, and Madeline Gabriel told me this years ago, and I always give her credit because it cracked me up so much. But she's, you know, she talked about, I mean, so if you're going to go over and have, you know, if you're going to have guests, do you ask them to send their clothing ahead of time for your dog to smell them and get to know them? And we just don't do this. You know, go ahead and send me your underwear. So my dog, do you mind popping a pair of underwear in the mail so that when you arrive Friday, he's already had your scent? We don't do that. I never ask my dog permission when I change deodorants or change laundry soap. So why are we doing powder everywhere? So there's a lot of suggestions that are very tangible. But when you break it down and go, is that really helpful? What would be more helpful? And that's where I want to come from, is there's concern that people think giving your dog. So what I see this translate into is people bring home the blanket and they play tug of war. People bring home the baby blanket and then throw it in the crate and leave the dog in there. People bring home the blanket and go, oh, look, it's Johnny. Woo! And now their dog is overexcited about this. And so we talk about the physiological things that go on with mom during third trimester and how most likely dogs are already exposed to the scent of baby, that this is actually just a way that gets many dogs over the top aroused and excited because the person is spending so much attention when in reality, we don't want to make it that big of a deal. So it's a shift, right? Bringing the blanket home is something tangible. People love tangible. That's why our expectant parents are usually eager for all those tips and they want to get that stuff. This is a tangible thing that they can do. And of course, they want to create harmony. And I always joke and say, I need to create the magical harmony blanket. I'd be rich by now. But it's more than this. It's so much more involved than this. Yeah.
Magical harmony blanket.
Yes.
Should we call the podcast episode
$5?
Jennifer's magical harmony blanket.
Forevermore, you will have lasting bonds. They'll be best friends. No, it's so much more. Our dogs are more complicated than this, right?
You can't,
and we are too.
You can't see it, podcast guest, but me and Jennifer have video, and it's just this little money signs just popping out of her eye sockets.
I know. So it's like, I have a whole line of candles. Hump me not, aggression be gone. You light them, and then it's all.
I sell sage in New Zealand so we can walk around the house burning sage. Hey, you said be creative, which is what I was trying to do there. And you said if you're not comfortable with these cases, refer on. There's one other thing you really wanted to talk about today. But before we move on today, do you want to add any final words to those two last points?
No, I think that... sometimes, especially early on in our careers, we can kind of say, oh, I can do it. I can do it. But I want people to really think about what that looks like. If you walk into a situation or you read something and you just feel like, ugh, I'm not sure, that's a good time to reach out. I would love to get your phone calls. I absolutely am available to trainers and other people who are looking for that kind of help. And, even to identify, am I in deep? Any tips, any suggestions? You don't have to be an educator to get support and help from me. I don't want millions of you calling, but it is my passion and something that is really important to me because if something goes wrong, it's a lot different when you involve children. So that's my point on that.
Keep it simple, have empathy and communication for your clients, but also for yourself. Babies grow, dogs age, relationships take time, be creative, and if you're not comfortable with these cases, refer it on. And I think a lot of that, apart from the babies grow, dogs age, can apply to lots of different niches that we work with our dogs and sexual other animals. Now, all of us is contributing towards between 2002 and 2019 and 2030, creating more dog-aware generations, which is something that you're really passionate about. Can you talk to this for us?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've started to say during Dog Bite Prevention Week, I start to put out my dog-aware stuff saying, I want people to be excited and proud that they are staying curious and interested in their complex dogs and their behavior. So that's why I want to have it be, saying dog bite prevention, education, it's not sexy. Dog safety, not sexy. But people want to become something. They want to be a part of something. So proud to be dog aware parents, proud to be dog aware grandparents, proud to be a dog aware community. Dog aware meaning staying curious and observant of your dog's body language, learning those stress signals, learning the things that they do that communicate discomfort, stress, fear, excitement, happiness, arousal, all those things, and continuing to learn with them, continuing to stay curious because it really does evolve. It changes just like we do. And different contexts, different situation, different household dynamics, everything changes. I see that every time my kids come home from college, I see dynamics shift. It's fascinating. So we've got to stay curious always. And so that's what I hope to do. And it's not one generation. I want all generations. So I want grandparents now to be excited. I want aunts, uncles. You don't have to be a parent. It should be everybody. Yeah. And small children. I think in our field, a lot of people see toddlers and go, oh, no, don't know what to do with them. Our small humans are such sponges. They are observing everything we're doing. So there's no better time than to broadcast and model different things that we're seeing with dog body language. That is the time. So I like to really take advantage of that.
Big fan of staying curious. I'm curious how you stay curious. What techniques do you use to consistently be kind of pushing your own development moving forward and building your skills? How do we stay curious?
How do we stay curious? I think sometimes it's searching out just the whys in certain things. Like, I can tell you right now, one of the things that's triggering my curiosity now is horses. Okay. And behavior in horses and behavior, how to, you know, look at their body language and different things. So I like to jump into other species to increase my curiosity, because I think it always throws me back and goes, you know, helps me see the connection. So I don't know if that's kind of down that path, but boy, just a desire and hunger for learning, you know. I'm curious why Rudy was barking at one in the morning. You know, I don't know why that happened, but I'm curious. Were there things outside? I mean, this everyday stuff, to take a moment and instead of assuming you know why, going, huh, that is really interesting. I don't know why. He's never done that before. So things like that, just taking a moment to not assume, but to question it, you know?
And with regards to the creating dog-aware generations, I went to your website and seen what I'm assuming is your family all donning, creating dog-aware generation T-shirts with big beaming smiles on their faces.
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Is there somewhere that people can go to get resources about this specific topic?
We are working on that. So we have things that are internal with the Family Paws educators, but we are working on expanding that and getting more information out there. We are planning on having a doggy detective program, and you know, that is going to target more dog aware skills. So that's my phrase: ears, eyes, tail, muzzle, gather the clues to solve the puzzle. And that's something that we really get excited about, and helps not only our children, but our parents to have fun. So that's something you can stay tuned, and hopefully we'll be seeing more of that kind of thing coming out.
Have I got it right? Ears, eyes, tail, muzzle, gather the clues to solve the puzzle.
Yes.
Well, that kind of demonstrates your get creative side of things.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't solve, you know, I used to go into schools and, you know, get kids excited and say, who likes to be a detective? And then ask them, do detectives solve a case with one clue? And no. And then you get them up and you know, make them wag their tails and ears, eyes, tail, muzzle, and you get them all chanting it. It's awesome.
I'm already envisioning me and... We have chosen a name, but I can't say it on here because Wifey would not be happy playing detective in the future. Hey, thanks so much for all of this, Jennifer. Sadly, we are now at the final question for this episode, but and you've probably answered it scattered throughout this episode already in some of the things you've said, but I'd like you to take us into the future now, because we went back to when you were a child. We've shared your story and what you're doing in 2019. At this point, I'd like to look forward. What would you like to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years in the animal training, working with families, horse training, the greater community? What do you want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years?
Wow. I think one of my biggest goals, and we've been striving at this for a while, but needs to happen, is I want it to be normalized that people are going to get education. I want our dogs and toddlers program everywhere. I mean, we have to get that kind of resource in front of people. The other thing is I'm really passionate about getting the medical and psychology communities on board with this. We need a team. We need a balanced team of everybody, you know, the psychology, the medical. We see too many dog bite victims that nobody's getting support. So that's like such a big mission of mine, is to create these teams working together with us as well. So that's huge. And obviously staying forward, moving forward with a positive training, positive reinforcement training, and those things, understanding our animals, not just expecting them to do things because we want them to, but really creating the relationship and building the relationship as they age.
One might say staying curious.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks again so much for sharing everything today, Jennifer. Just before we do officially wrap up, I know we've mentioned this throughout the episode, but can you just remind everyone listening where they can go to find out more about you, what you do, Family Paws, and get in touch?
Yeah, so they can always find us at familypaws.com. And then we have Family Paws Official on Instagram. And hopefully you'll follow us.
And as mentioned, we'll obviously link to all of this in the show notes as well. This has been so much fun. Jennifer, from myself and on behalf of everyone listening, we really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. It's really appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.